Hello everybody, James here, story time with Dutch, episode 64.5 or Ask Dutch Anything 8, which I'm getting pretty good at remembering these numbers. We've got books, we've got t-shirts, blah blah blah. I'm sure you hear me talk about it on the Friday one. Also, one thing I will make mention of is I think it's actually today, so accidentally Dutch, I've booked Shane Douglas's debut podcast to come out on the same day as this podcast. So eventually I'll probably shift it over to Wednesday to not get it as confused. But for now, today you can download Shane Douglas's new podcast, which as we're recording this, I still haven't come up with a name for, but it's probably going to be called Franchise University. But just search for Shane Douglas podcast.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Dutch has a university.
I know. So he wanted to call it Franchise University because he didn't
of Dutch.
But he didn't want to name it that because there's Funk University for Terry Funk, who we were talking about in the last episode.
Yeah.
So he sent a text message to, I think, Tommy Dreamer to ask Terry if he could name the podcast Franchise University. And we never got an answer on it. So we don't know what it's going to be called.
Hey, so I'm going to tell you. You're waiting for an answer.
Mm.
So it's in lieu. It's in limbo.
Yeah. Sadly, we may be waiting for an answer for
quite
a long time.
Why would he need permission? Just out of respect?
Yeah, that's it.
I call mine the University of Dutch.
Well, he needs to call you then as well and ask.
Yeah. Well, tell him my answer is no.
Well, it's going to be called something.
We cannot have too many universities.
Well, there's loads of universities, like, you know, maybe what? Shane's could be like one of those internet-only ones where you, like, pay for the diploma.
Hey, wait a minute. Did you say diploma?
I did say diploma.
Look at there. That's the diploma right there. The University of Dutch diploma available at dirtydutchmantel.com.
Is the website back up?
Oh, Gmail, gmail.com.
Yeah, forget the website. Email dirtydutchmantel with two L's at gmail.com and make your request there. Yeah. Forget the website.
Forget that website. Hell, the moon landing. I've said that before. Moon landing was easier. But you can have your name right here, and you could put it on the wall. And somebody comes up with a wrestling question, and you can ask them, where did you get your diploma from? What university? Oh, I don't have one. Well, I do. And have this hanging on your wall. And I write dirtydutchmantel with two L's at gmail.com and I'll get right back to you.
There you go.
You could have one of these beauties.
And just to reiterate, Shane Douglas Official, the YouTube channel is already up, in fact. So go and subscribe to that now. But then the first episode of whatever the Shane Douglas podcast will be called, that will be up August 29th, Tuesday. Anyway, this is Ask Dutch Anything. If you want to ask Dutch any question or make it a good one. Yes, there are books as well. We did the plug for the books last time. Everyone knows we've got books, The World According to Dutch and Tales from a Dirt Road and My Two.
Not
well.
Everybody. We could have, seriously, you need to act like this is the first time people have ever heard the podcast.
It's like an audition. Your camera's moving again. Why does your camera only move at the beginning?
I don't know. I think I got a ghost here.
Mm. Anyway, all right, it's in a good position now. We'll leave
now. Now it's irritating.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't want it to move.
I need to look up why it's moving and how to stop it. Okay, I'm not doing it now, though. You're just going to have to suffer with one more.
Okay.
We've got questions. If you want your question submitted to Dutch Mantel, make it a good one and email it to questionsfordutch@gmail.com. And first one, Tony Kleinberg did just that. And he asks, what are your thoughts on Bill Apter? He was friends with Jerry Lawler back in the day and was responsible for recommending Andy Kaufman to come to Memphis after Vince McMahon Sr. refused to use him. But what did you and the other boys think of Bill?
Okay, he said it was his idea for Andy Kaufman to come to Memphis?
I think he reckoned... Right, so Andy had already tried to get into the WWWF and Vince McMahon Sr. said no.
Bullshit.
Oh, really?
Don't believe anything Bill says. No, that is true. He was trying to get into the old WWF with the old Vince McMahon Sr. And Vince McMahon Sr. actually came out and says, well, he wouldn't be a good fit for professional wrestling because of the comedy that he likes to do. So he would think it would be better if they didn't, you know, incorporate him into the company. And then when Bill heard that, he said, well, I got a spot for you. And he did. He called Lawler and he asked Lawler, you know, Andy Kaufman. He said, yeah, I know him because he was doing Taxi. He said he wants to get into wrestling. And he says, well, yeah. And I don't even think they had a minimum they paid him. He was the first Darby Allin that loved wrestling and didn't care what he got paid. See, because, you know, his comedy, and I said this in one of my books that you can see right behind me here, it was the biggest comedy club he'd ever appeared in, Memphis Mid-South Coliseum. You know, where he's used to, say, 200 people, maybe 250, which was a big crowd. He could walk out there in front of 11,000. I made this statement before. What qualified Andy Kaufman to be the main event on a major Memphis show? Well, because he sold 11,270-some-odd tickets. Mm-hmm. That qualified him to be in the main event. And that's actually in the culture wars. Andy Kaufman appearing in that match kind of set his destiny from forever, because the man in the moon and all this other stuff that kind of boosted off that. So, and he died not too long after that, but he made big, big headlines, and he actually made Memphis bigger than what it ever was. Mm-hmm. Because Memphis wrestling now is kind of doing a revival, or has been doing a revival for the last 5 years. And I don't know why, because I think the other wrestling got so wrestle-centric, I think, because they got away from the stories, except for WWE, AEW, they got away from the stories and went to wrestling. See, Memphis never had great wrestling, but they had great stories. They had great angles, great characters, and that's what the people liked, and they did big business.
Leaving Andy Kaufman there, Bill specifically, was he always at the matches in Memphis? Because I know obviously he was going to be based in New York. How often did he turn up down there?
Once a year, maybe.
Oh, really?
He would show up, and Lawler, and he wouldn't even probably have shown up in Memphis. I don't know who made the first contact between Lawler and Bill, but Lawler had the foresight to say, well, this guy does a lot of stuff with the magazines. And of course, Lawler was pushing himself, you know, and he was telling him the stuff we're doing in Memphis and we're doing good business. And he came down to visit Lawler, but in visiting Lawler, now we opened up a whole new world to him. Now he saw this territory, and it was fun. Memphis was fun. The backstage was fun. Nobody was mad. Nobody, you know, we were all laughing. And Jerry Jarrett, great booker. Lawler, great booker. So we were doing stuff we enjoyed doing. And Bill was accepted inside the locker room. And I don't know how much was actually talked in front of him. I think maybe some guys would like close doors, but he was accepted and he was one of the boys.
Were some people, as you said, you know, were some people like less accepting of him because he wasn't actually fully in the business in that sense and would close ranks around him, away from him, or would some conversely realize how valuable the wrestling magazines were and, you know, try and butter him up and put an arm around him and try and get some extra photos taken for the mags?
That was Lawler.
Yeah.
But he never told us about it. But I don't think we realize the importance of the wrestling magazines, how that they were much more important then than what they are now. They still make them, but I don't think many people
like collectors' items now.
So much stuff is disseminated on the internet. You don't need to go buy $3 magazine unless, like you said, unless it's a collector's item or something. And there was probably a few guys that kind of shut down when Bill was there. And they didn't shut down because he was there. They were uncomfortable because they didn't really know him that much. And we had preached for years and years and years the value of kayfabe. Keep it amongst us. And some guys took that seriously and wouldn't discuss what they were going to do in the match in front of him.
How often were you in PWI featured, do you remember? Or did you ever buy the magazines while you were in the business?
No, PWI magazine actually cost money. And I didn't spend any money on it. Oh, I was in it. I never had a lot of articles about me. But Lawler did. But he was he had a lot of stuff about him. And Flair was in their lot. And I don't know how much they sought out this on their own. But Lawler, he understood the value of it way before I did.
Did you ever try and buy photos from Bill for 8x10s? Would he offer that service to the wrestlers now?
No. Did he offer it then? I never heard about it. Because we had our 8x10s. We had our own little setup for that. So I never got any from him.
We will move on. Michael Sanders. Which wrestlers do you think would have gotten a much bigger push or been hugely more successful had they been just a couple of inches taller? It's suggested, just for example, that wrestlers like Bret Hart and Randy Savage felt their status within the WWF was always at a disadvantage compared to taller, but mostly less talented competition. Cough, Giant Gonzalez, cough.
I have no idea. We're taking in a hell of a lot of wrestlers here.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, he's not offering any alternatives.
No, I know.
He's just telling me name short wrestlers or shorter wrestlers that you think would have been pushed more had they been taller. Probably all of them, basically.
Okay, well, let me ask you this.
If they got talent, they got talent. And I don't think that the height had that much to do with it, really.
Let me ask you this, then. Who are the biggest exaggerators of their height compared to their build height? So let's say they're 5'3" and they build themselves as 7'4". Was there anyone who you just like, stop, no one's going to believe that?
Bill Dundee, probably.
Oh, what was he billing himself as?
Oh, I don't know. I think he would bill himself at 5'10", maybe. He was like 5'6", 5'7". But see, Memphis was never a stickler on height, really. Memphis actually used a lot of smaller guys, mm-hmm. but could move. And in being around Memphis, you learn telling the story by osmosis. You're just around it, and you were asked to tell the story. So then and the natural storytellers like Lawler, me, you know, a lot of guys, Handsome Jimmy, you know, we could do that because you were asked to show emotion and we could do that, I think. And the people bought it. And again, I've said this before, when you touch them here, when you touch them in the heart, you got them. I don't care if you're 5 foot tall or 4 foot 10, if you touch them, you got them. And size has nothing to do with drawing power. Mm-hmm. Example, Andy Kaufman.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, he was the skinniest, sickest looking. Of course, he was sick. The reason he looked that way was because he was actually sick. But he drew 11,000 people several times. So it's more than just talent. It's opportunity as success. Opportunity meets preparation. That's what he did.
We'll leave that one there. The next one, Creative Media Bar says, "Hi, Dutch. Love your work in the podcast. My question is, who do you think should and will dethrone Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship? And as a booker, what would you do with Gunther / Imperium following Gunther's dethroning?
Wait a minute. Let's don't talk about, you talk about his dethroning and getting rid of Imperium like that's in, like it's going to happen.
No. Not getting rid of Imperium, but I mean, eventually Gunther's going to have to lose. So who should it beat him? What?
Oh, who should beat him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think anybody right now. I really don't. I think just take this to SummerSlam before you do anything.
What, next year's SummerSlam? Time,
yeah.
So another year.
Take it to WrestleMania. I'm sorry. All right. Take it to WrestleMania. Then let's do something with him and work it up to that. I don't think he needs to lose before then. He doesn't. Because Gunther is a generational talent. A talent like that comes along like Roman Reigns. He's a generational talent. And talents like Gunther and Roman Reigns, they come along once a generation. And they are doing the prototype of what we will probably be copied later on. And if they copy it too much, you know, the people say, ah, no, that's the same thing they did here, they did there. But Roman Reigns has a certain vibe that he gives off. Gunther does the same thing. And another one that gives off the good vibe is LA Knight. You just get a vibe off the guy because he's a good talker. But Gunther, not only, it's not his talk that jumps out at you, it's his style. Because he literally beats the shit out of people. And the people like that. And the people that he does it to, I don't think they might not like it, but they put up with it because they're making money. So, and I don't know who should dethrone him. Who was the kid he worked with on Raw and he almost beat him?
Chad Gable.
Chad Gable. And the thing about if he got dethroned, I think this person is apparently thinking that whoever dethrones him, they'll go on a long line of wins. You know, it has been known you could lose a title 1 week and the same guy could get it back in the next show. Me and Randy Savage one time, I won the title on Chattanooga Live TV. Out came Savage, bitching, raising hell. I want a shot at the title. And I said, no, I just had a match. And he slapped me, pissed me off. I said, well, you can have the match right now. And we got in the ring and he beat me for the title. I held the title for a total of about 15 minutes. It's the shortest title reign ever, except for, I don't know, they may have been others. But, you know, just because Gunther loses, I don't mean he can't gain it back, but I don't think he needs to lose it to Chad Gable. I don't. I really don't. I think they could. I don't have an answer for that. I really don't.
When he eventually does lose it, is he straight in the world title picture for you?
Well, I don't know why he couldn't be in the world title picture right now.
Hmm?
See, just because you have a title, I'm thinking creatively now. Just because he has a title doesn't mean he couldn't challenge Roman Reigns. And I think if he challenged Roman Reigns title versus title, I think Gunther may be the one to dethrone Roman Reigns, which nobody is thinking in that direction. And now, if you have two, I think the WWE needs to have a rule that you can't hold two titles at the same time. And you put the other one up for 2 weeks and you pick to let the people pick who they want to be in it and let them go. I don't like these little 1 week tournament deals because you gotta beat two guys. Let the people pick it and go by the poll. You know, like they do America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that it? Do they vote on the guys, people, mm-hmm. or is that something else? Is that another show?
You know, they have phone votes, don't they? And they whittle one down every week. Yeah.
And I love those because people sit at home and you'll know exactly what your viewership is and how much they like one guy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take that data and you make a lot of decisions on that.
Next question. Kevin Lake, Dutch. I grew up on the Memphis territory watching the show on Saturdays on Channel 7 WTVW. I went almost every Wednesday night to the Evansville Coliseum to watch the matches from 1980 until they stopped running, where I only missed four shows. I always remember it as good cards with almost always a hot crowd. So why do so many now say they hated working Evansville?
Who says that?
Kevin Lake, but apparently a lot of wrestlers have said they hated working Evansville.
Oh, yeah. The reason I think is because they'd already made Louisville that week. I mean, Memphis that week. They'd already made Louisville. That was the Monday and Tuesday towns. So to go to Evansville on Wednesday, they were tired, I would think. I think Wednesday you need to have a short town, but Evansville wasn't that close either. Evansville was like 150 miles away. So it wasn't that short. So, and I don't know why I liked Evansville, but I think a lot of guys, they would stay over in Louisville and then make Evansville the next day. I don't know. It would just, don't ever listen to a bunch of wrestlers because they would bitch and moan. And if they had the schedule the guys have now, they'd be happy as hell. But it was a tough schedule. It was a 7-day work week, so they probably were tired.
Joey has written in and says, your second run in WCW 1990 to 1991 coincided with one of the biggest collections of creative brain farts ever put into practice by a wrestling company. Without going through them all, could you discuss your memories of the Black Scorpion angle?
I saw that, and was I there?
You were there in 1990 when that happened, yeah. I think.
That was when Ole did the voiceovers.
Mm-hmm.
It sucked. It was the living shits. It was horrible.
Do you want to see a video?
You show it to me.
Okay, I'll set it up. Okay. We're back. What about Jim Ross?
Oh, he was a nice looking guy. Got his hair combed. Got his tie on.
I suspect he still combs his hair, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, let's listen to this.
These comments from the mysterious Black Scorpion.
I know, Sting. That must be difficult for you. Visualize an opponent that you know nothing about. I've given you clues. You still can't figure out who the Black Scorpion is. But you've already seen what I'm capable of. So remember, when you meet me in the ring, I will be going for you, for your life.
You're enthralled by this, I can tell, Dutch.
Yes. I was listening to him.
You were more enthralled by Jim Ross's hairstyle than the Black Scorpion.
I was. I really was. So I don't remember the person who wrote you this. They said I was there.
You were in 1990. Yes.
Okay. I may have missed this because let me explain something to people. Just because they showed that video on TV and I was there, that doesn't mean I saw the video. Because if you're there on this taped show, you don't see the video. Just the truck sees it. We didn't even have the big screens there, so I don't think the fans saw it either. But even if you did have the big screen, I could hear it, but I didn't see it. A lot of times they just take that out and stick it in post-production. So I thought it was not a good representation. I don't know what they were looking for something. And you see this a lot. You know, creative needs something to boost attendance or boost pay-per-view buys. This wasn't it, but they were making an attempt to get there, and they made a mistake. They completely missed the mark there.
Yeah, well, the funny thing was is that when they conceived the Black Scorpion, they didn't even know who was actually going to be the Black Scorpion. And I think this may have been a reaction to the Sting-Lex Luger matches that weren't drawing. So they thought, well, we need a new opponent. And then the new opponent ends up being the Black Scorpion, who cuts a lady in half and then, you know, does like the head turning, just like really bargain basement amateur magic. And then it turned out to be Ric Flair. So there you go. Rubbish. We will move on. William says, hi there. Did Dutch ever find himself on Shawn Michaels' bad side when Dutch was there during the 1995-1996 time frame? Thanks.
Well, I never found myself on his bad side, which I should have. After Ron and Don jacked him up in the dressing room at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But to their defense, they didn't tell me they were going to do it and didn't even tell me after they had already done it on the ride from the garden back to wherever we were staying that night. They never said one word about it. So
did you have to walk on eggshells around Shawn and the Click, or did certain people feel like they had to?
No, the Click and Shawn walked on eggshells around Don and Ron because nobody ever messed with them. Nobody ever. Those are two guys that are big. They're about 6'9". They were about 270 then. They're just big boys. And they're not all muscled up. You never saw them got mad. I saw them get mad at anybody. I never saw them raise their voice to anybody. Even if they were in an argument, they would speak in a normal tone of voice. But you could tell when they were getting a little bit pissed. And when you crossed that point, it was too much. I did see Donnie slap a guy one time. My God, he liked to slap his head off. And I said, why did you slap him? And Donnie told me, he said, brother, he said, don't punch him. He said, slap him. He said, because then you ring that bell when you slap him. Because how you hit him on the eye and the ear at the same time and the jaw, and you got more force to it. It's easier to connect with the slap than it is a punch. So I remember that. So I got mad at this old woman at the supermarket one time, so I slapped her. So then she beat the shit out of me, so I never did that again. But no, Ronnie and Donnie had a lot of respect physically inside the WWE dressing room. Nobody tried them. Nobody tested them.
Do you know from firsthand experience, maybe not with Ron and Dom, but wrestlers who would say that the Click really use their backstage political clout to hold down or get rid of or something like that?
Oh, yeah. I would run across that. And I don't doubt the validity of that. Because if they had Vince's ear, they had his ear, period. So I think Shane Douglas, I think he's made that claim a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
That he didn't. They forced him into a lower spot, or they challenged his rise up. They didn't want him there. And there is some validity in that. I think that's true, but I don't know who else they may have held down. I think, you know, the Click was pretty big. Who was in the Click? Shawn?
Shawn, Kevin Nash, Kevin, Scott Hall, Shawn Waltman, and later
Undertaker?
Triple H. No, he was Undertaker. BSK.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds more like him anyway.
Yeah.
I'm asking because when the Ron and Don, when they jacked Shawn up in the locker room in Madison Square Garden, Taker guarded the door.
Mm-hmm.
He stood in front of the door so nobody would come in. And Ron told me, He had him like this up against the wall. Didn't hit him, just grabbed him and told him in that low tone of voice. I said, remember, I said they never yelled. And they told him they never want to hear their names out of coming out of his mouth again. And they let him go. Message delivered.
Next question. Salvatore M. Has Dutch ever worked with someone who had the lightest worker's handshake, who was ironically a crowbar in the ring? So let's describe the worker's handshake first.
Well, it's like this, you know. You never grab a guy, but I used to do it later on. You know, you grab a guy, like it's like a finger shake. It's like, eh. But after a while, you feel kind of stupid doing that. So I would always put out a half a shake, just your fingers, really. And the guy would say, and that's a way of saying, I'll take care of you and you take care of me. So some guys I didn't used to know, I would just meet them the first time. I would grab their hand and I would shake it. Pleased to meet you, man. See you in the ring. I would just shower down on it as hard as I could. The guy looked at me. I said, oh, I'm only kidding you. So, but a lot of guys had the shake. I first learned that from the Hispanic guys. They showed it to me first. Hmm. And Hispanic guys, most of them are very, very light. I don't know why they just were. So I learned a lot by working with those guys. You know, I was working with one guy and he had come from South America. I remember I told you about the guy who had Titanes del Ring.
Mm-hmm.
I think he worked for that group. So I'm gonna have to research that a little more. So, and he had a real light handshake.
Hmm. Salvatore also adds, also does Dutch look at someone like they have three heads on when they give him that limp handshake? Or do you expect the limp handshake these days?
Well, I don't really expect it. Well, I do expect it, but if I go in, you know, how you doing? You know, a lot of guys just do this or just do a bump or, you know, I don't really do the handshake anymore. Just give me a bump, boom. Yeah. And we're good.
Well, so the handshake thing, how's the handshake etiquette sort of changed over time then? Because was there like a time where you had to shake everyone's hand regardless if you knew them or not, if they were in the building?
Oh, yeah. Years ago. Well, you would go in, you wouldn't know anybody. So, and you were the newest guy there. So go around and by protocol, shake everybody's, introduce yourself. If no, see, nowadays we don't have to introduce it. We know who we are. It's like, hey, what a you bastard or whatever. But if you're new, just go shake everybody's hand. Don't be standoffish. Don't be an asshole, because that's one of the worst reps you can get, is that he didn't shake my hand or he's standoffish. Or see, a lot of people get the impression that he thinks he doesn't really need to be here, or he's better than this. So you try to avoid that at all cost. Now, things are different now. Things are different. But years ago, that was the way it was.
I think we've got time for two more then. So I'm going to ask Harry from Erkrath, Germany. He has asked for your Mount Rushmore of wrestling tag teams.
Okay.
I don't know if that's like for a draw or just your favorites to watch or.
Midnight Express.
Mm-hmm.
Rock and Roll Express.
Mm-hmm.
The Assassins. Let's go way, way back. And Gene and Ole Anderson. Mm. The Anderson Brothers. And I mean, there's a lot more people you would. That's interchangeable, but that's just off the top of my head. But the Rock and Roll and the Midnight, they belong in there, because when they had matches, they had bangers. That's a new word now. Mm. You got to have a banger. I mean, and they drew nothing but money with those guys all across the country. They was in Oklahoma, Mid-South, nothing but money, nothing but money. Then they went to Mid-Atlantic, nothing but money. So And they were a better fit, I think, in Mid-Atlantic than they were in Mid-South. But, of course, they had that heater, Jim Cornette, outside the ring. And Jim was walking heat. Because everybody in the crowd hated Jim Cornette. I mean, literally hated him. See, where the if you were a wrestler, some people can actually like you even though you're a bad guy. But managers, there's nothing. There was nothing to like about Jimmy. You immediately hated him from the moment you saw him. And when he got that tennis racket, that was his defense mechanism. He hit me one night with that tennis racket. I went to the dressing room. I said, Jimmy, thank you, man. Thank you. I said, brother, do I owe you money? No. I said, you hit me like I hadn't paid you in like a month. Well, he hit me and it was flat. And it was solid and it sounded off on that whole arena. That's what he was going for. Well, he got it. It didn't really hurt that bad, but it stung, and I knew he was there. And he said, oh, I'm sorry to hit you too hard. I said, I'd let it go. I wasn't mad about it or anything, but, I mean, he could bring that thing. But imagine if he turned that thing sideways and went with it with that metal, with that wood part, with a fan, and that's what he would do. You know, he would get them pretty good. It's a damn wonder Jimmy wasn't sued more, really.
I think he was around 1990 or something. But yeah, I think he did have to go to court. We've talked about the Assassins a fair amount, but we've not really talked about Ole and Gene Anderson. So why do they make it onto your top four tag teams ever?
Okay, you're talking about Terry and Dory Funk. They were just like miles apart in personality and style. Gene and Ole was similar to that, but both of them had that grind you down style. They were totally two different personalities, but in the ring, they meshed well. This is what they would do. They had a strategy, and the Assassins had a strategy too. It was called cut the ring in half, and you tried to keep your opponent in your half of the ring always. And that gave the commentators something to talk about. They have a great strategy. Once they get him weakened down, if they can keep him in their side of the ring and keep him from making the tag, and that made the tag so important. So if he made the tag, he topped the first test, and now we're off and running. They were very, very good. Ole did great interviews. I mean, and Ole is another one that you just couldn't like if you wanted to. I mean, he had this interview that if you could, you'd reach into TV and pull him out and choke him because people hated Ole. And Gene never talked. I don't think Gene could talk, tell you the truth. Ole always did the talking, a mile a minute. And he was the same way when he was a booker. You know, if he liked you, great. If he didn't like you, oh, my God, your life was a living hell. Because he didn't make it that way. Because he didn't give a shit. And I don't know the last time I saw Ole. I think it was at least 6-7 years ago. He was still the same way. Now, he's hurt. Now, something wrong with him. He was in a wheelchair. But his attitude has not changed. And I like Ole. And I think he liked me, I think. But good guy, but there were some people that hated Ole. I mean, in the business, they just hated him.
I think I've interviewed most of them. very few people have said that they liked Ole. I think it's you, Dr. Tom, and maybe one other person. Okay, I'm going to ask you one more question, then we will shut down this podcast. I don't think you're going to have an answer for it, but I've got a backup question to go with. Zer Rothschild, I was, of course, a huge fan of the Rock and Roll Express. One of the worst nights was when Rick Rude and Manny Fernandez beat them on a television taping. What was very noticeable to me, and maybe not others because they never mentioned why, was the tag team belt suddenly was silver and gold rather than all gold. When the Rock and Roll Express won them back some 9 months or so later, they debuted the tag team belts. They had a complete makeover. Do you know why these belts were turned silver and gold? I saw them listed as silver anniversary belts. So do you know why the belts were redesigned?
What's his name?
Zaire Rothschild.
Zaire?
Z-E-E-H. So I don't know how you pronounce that.
Zay, I guess.
Zay?
Okay. I guess. His name is Rothschild?
Yes.
I think that's a bogus name. I really do. I don't think anybody. So why were their belts different? I imagine, I think, trying to solve this dilemma, I guess they just swapped the belts, I guess. Why would that be a pressing question? He said they were red, then they were gold.
Well, silver or gold. Okay, I knew you wouldn't know the answer to this, but I thought I'd ask it anyway.
I don't know the answer.
No, because I actually wanted to make mention of, because this fella mentioned Manny Fernandez. And we've never talked about Manny on the show. And whenever anyone talks about Manny on the show, there's always usually a good story that goes along with it. So anything about Manny you can share?
Well, he went to Puerto Rico.
That's already a good one.
He went to Puerto Rico and he made the TV on a Thursday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he disappeared. He didn't make the Friday show. He didn't make the Saturday show. And he didn't make the Sunday show. Then he showed back up on Monday or Tuesday. He's ready to go. And they said, where were you last week? And he didn't have an answer, I don't think. So what happened? You know, I think Manny had a little penchant for a little bit of the illegal substances. And if you have a problem with that, Puerto Rico is the worst place to go. He disappeared for a whole weekend and showed back up on Monday. And he didn't remember. And they put him, they tried him one more week. I guess he made those shows. But they don't know what happened to him. And he doesn't know what happened to him. But I brought Buddy Landell down there one time.
Oh, God.
I love Buddy. I went and picked him up at the airport, took him to his room. It was about 4 o'clock. I said, I'll be back at 6 and we'll pick you up. Okay, man. Okay, man. I come back at 6. Nobody. I knocked and knocked and knocked and saw the other guys coming out of the hotel. Hey, have you guys seen Buddy Landell? No, no. Knocked on the office door. They hadn't seen him. So he missed the Friday show, but he didn't do a Manny on me. He made the Saturday and Sunday show.
Hmm.
So I called him up. I said, where were you? Oh, I was there, man. I was there. I said, no, you wasn't. I said, I hung around like 30 minutes. You weren't there. Yeah, I must have got back right when you. What time did you say you were going to be? It was just, I was there. I was just a bit late. If you'd waited a little more, you'd have got me. And then he wanted to know, would that affect his money that week? I said, did you work Friday? He said, no. I said, I'm sure it's going to be accounted for in your pay. You'll just get Saturday and Sunday. I doubt if you'll get to Friday. Well, what the hell, man? I said, well, I don't know what to tell you. And I love Buddy. Oh, he's too much. He really is.
Is anyone does anyone tell taller tales than Manny?
Manny's entertaining too. He is really. I've never been around him that much. I was around him in Puerto Rico, and I went to San Antonio for like, I don't know, a couple weeks, and he was there entertaining there too, but. And Manny was a great heel. Oh, he was a great heel and a good baby. He was a good worker. He really was. So, but I don't remember any of the stories he told me, but they were, I was entertained when he was talking. And he's actually a good guy.
I like how the answers sort of turned into who was more unreliable, Manny Fernandez or Buddy Landell, which is a great subject that I didn't realise that we needed, but apparently we definitely did need that as a question and an answer. Listen, I'm going to shut this podcast down really quickly because I've heard my front door go, which means my takeout's here and it's getting cold. Okay. So thank you very much for watching. Shane Douglas' official YouTube channel is out now with a brand new first ever episode with me and him of our new podcast, also on all podcast platforms. We've got 2 books each. Links are in the description. 2 T-shirts out. Links are in the description. And yes, Dutch.
I forgot what I was going to say something.
That's fine.
Hey, does Shane have any books out yet?
No, he doesn't. I've asked him this, and he just said he just no interest in writing one.
Why?
Because he can't be bothered. I think it's just a time thing more than anything. If he was going to do it, he'd do it himself.
Hey, okay. Given this idea, with the AI out now, all he's got to do is do an overarching composite, and it'll write the book for him.
AI's shit for the most part. It really is.
You don't know yet. You really don't know. I've tried it, and it's actually not bad.
When's your third book coming out? Written by AI?
No, part of it will be written by AI. the facts will be accurate.
Yeah.
But see, I just want to see, and then I'm going to take it, and I'll adjust them. He could be the first wrestling book partially written by AI. What do you think?
I wouldn't bill it as such. I think that'd be a giant off-put. So, like, you and...
I'll give another name.
What name?
I'll give it...
Helmut Schitz.
Helmut Schitz is my co-writer.
Yeah, your AI pseudonym.
Not Hans. Hans had a tendency to leave places when he got pissed off and mad. But Helmut, nope, he'd say, Helmut Schitz. You like that. You like that little story, right?
I do. And we can keep bringing it up as well. It's like
Helmut Schitz
and Darby Allin. They're going to be 2 stories that are going to keep us going for weeks on this show.
Okay.
Listen, right, I'm going to shut this down because my food's getting cold. So thank you very much for watching, everybody. Dutch, we the people, we'll catch you on Friday.
Good luck on your podcast with Shane.
Thank you.